In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, we're told that it's impossible to please Yahweh without faith. Impossible, can't be done. If we don't have faith, then no matter what we do, it will never be enough. Now, why must we have faith? Why must we believe? It's really quite simple. For Yahweh to accomplish His will in our lives, we must believe not only in Him, but also that He is able to fulfill that which He's promised in His Word. We must believe that Yahweh is the Father, Creator of all that we see, the universe, and is able to do all that we read within His Word. If we don't believe, if we don't have faith, then it's impossible for Yahweh to work within our lives. The same was true for Yahshua when he walked this earth. For those who had no faith, remember, he was unable to help. Couldn't do it. Lack of faith. But for those who had faith, he said that their faith made them whole. Certainly it was Yahweh's power, but their faith also made them whole. You know, so often do people look or demand for physical proof for Yahweh. They want to see concrete evidence. And unless they can prove Yahweh absolutely, they refuse to believe. Yahshua said, "Blessed are those who believe and have not seen." We have no physical proof, but yet we believe. There's something very special about a faith that doesn't require physical proof, concrete evidence. Now understand that I'm not saying that we're not to study, not to search out, not to prove Yahweh's word. We're commanded to. But there are certain things we need to take on faith. There are certain things within Yahweh's word. Sometimes we need faith. And that's all that's required is faith. For instance, again, we can't prove the physical existence of Yahweh. We can't do it. It's impossible. Can't be done. We can't prove that Yahshua rose from the dead. We can't prove that we will be resurrected at Yahshua's return. Can't prove it. We can't prove that Yahweh inspired the word before us. We have faith, but we can't prove it. We have faith that all these things are true according to the word that we have here. You see, sometimes there's a difference between proving with evidence, always proving with evidence, and believing through faith, believing because this is what Yahweh's word says. Sometimes all we need is faith. Now, I've seen so many people fall from the truth because of faith, a lack of faith. They don't believe. They needed concrete evidence to prove that Yahshua was the Messiah, to prove that the books that we have here are indeed the books Yahweh inspired, or leave the faith entirely because they can't prove Yahweh's existence. It's so important that we understand again that there are certain truths we must believe on faith. You can't prove it. Not with physical, concrete evidence. You can't do it. So what is faith? Let me ask that. What is faith? Turn to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11. And let's find out here what faith is. Faith. Faith. Hebrews 11 verse 1. It says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, a conviction of things not seen." The NIV says, "Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see." So what we find here is faith is the assurance, means confidence. Faith is the confidence of things hoped for, the certainty of things not seen. So it's not just a belief. And this is important to remember. It's not just a belief. Faith is a belief that is certain, a belief that is resolute, contains no doubts. We can't be wishy-washy when it comes to faith. We must believe, and that belief must be certain. We can't go halfway with faith. It must be a certainty that that has happened, or that will happen. There's no doubt in our mind. No doubt, no question. Certain faith, certain belief, that what we find in Yahweh's word, and that's faith. When we know and when we are certain and when we believe with every ounce of our being, that is faith. Faith is not just a laxed belief. Oh, it might be that way or it might not be. Faith is absolutely. That's the way it is. I'm certain. I am certain of that belief. Again, faith requires a belief without physical evidence. We have no physical evidence of Yahweh's existence. We have no proof besides what we see in the heavens and here on earth and in the complexity of life. Certainly have evidence of an intelligent designer, but no evidence that Yahweh himself did this. But we believe it. We believe it. We have no physical evidence that Yahweh made man, but no physical evidence of Adam and Eve. But we believe it. We have faith. Again, faith requires belief even when no concrete evidence is available as possible. It requires faith. Turn to Habakkuk. It's not a real common book. But here we find a truth that most would think we would find in the New Testament. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4. And let's see here if I can find this before you do. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4. This minor prophet says, "Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright in him." Now listen to this. "But the righteous shall live by his faith." The righteous shall live by faith. Now this is an Old Testament minor prophet. And we find here, even back in the Old Testament, that we were to live by faith. And we know that the law at this time was obligatory, was required for Yahweh's people. So here we see that faith does not negate the law. We also know that in Romans 3:31, Paul says, "Do we negate, do we make void the law?" Paul says, "Certainly not. Yahweh forbid. We establish the law." But here we see that they were to live by faith even in the Old Testament. This is not a New Testament theology. This is something found long before the New Testament. This truth was found in the Old, and it was required from the beginning, from Adam. Yahweh said, "Don't do it, and have faith in my word." From Noah, from Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to all the prophets, they were to live by faith. They were to live by believing that Yahweh was indeed who he was and who he said he was. This is faith. And it's always been here. It's not something we find in the New Testament. It's something that goes all the way back to the beginning with Adam and Eve, when Yahweh was in a garden with the first man and woman. For the remainder of this message, I would like to look at examples. We're going to do quite a bit of reading today, but I like to look at the context. And I want to look at examples of faith, look at examples of belief, conviction, and how we're to illustrate and exemplify our faith, our belief, our conviction. So turn to Genesis chapter 6, verse 13 to begin. Genesis chapter 6, verse 13. And this is the account of Noah. Starts off in verse 13, "And Elohim said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth." Now this day again is coming. I believe it's not too far off in the future. This time it will be quenched and destroyed with fire. But as it is today, it was during the days of Noah, and that is the earth was full of violence and corruption. Again, really no different from what we see today. Maybe even worse than we see today, but certainly it is getting worse and worse every day we're here. Verse 14, "Make you an ark of gopher wood. Room shall you make in the ark, and shall pitch it within and without with pitch. And this is how you shall make it, the length of the ark, 300 cubits. And remember, a cubit is about 18 inches. The width is 50 cubits. The height is 30 cubits. And a light shall you make to the ark, and a cubit shall you finish it upright. And the door of the ark shall you set in the side of it. With lower, second, and third stories shall you make it. And I, behold, I do bring the flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, and which is the breath of life from under heaven. Everything that is in the earth shall die." So this was a promise. And Yahweh here is saying, build this ark. Verse 18, "But I will establish my covenant with you, And you shall come into the ark, you and your sons and your wives and your sons' wives with you, and every living thing of all flesh. Two of every sort shall you bring into the ark and keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, and of the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing of the ground after its kind. Two of every sort shall come to you to keep them alive. And take unto you of all food that is eaten, and gather it to you, and it shall be food for you and for them. In this manner to know according to all that Elohim commanded him, so did he. Now it's speculated and believed that there was no rain before the flood. There was a mist, most people believe, in the atmosphere, possibly helping with UV rays. It's a lot of speculation, but the Bible gives no evidence of rain prior to the flood. So to many, I'm sure the idea of a flood was somewhat far-fetched. What are you telling us, Noah? It's going to rain? Why in the world are you building this ark? I'm sure he got a lot of criticism throughout the many years he built this ark. But he believed. It'd be like us building a boat in the desert. Why? Why? Well, you know, what would be the point? I'm sure, again, he got a lot of flack, a lot of criticism. Maybe even was castigated here and there, criticized. You know, but Noah believed. Noah believed. He had faith, even though there was no evidence at the time of rain, supposedly. He believed that Yahweh was true and that he could count on his word and that a flood would come to pass that would destroy all flesh. Hebrews 11 says that he moved with holy fear to build this ark. Why? Because of his faith. He believed Yahweh. He believed in his promises. And no matter how ridiculous it might have been at that point in time, he built this ark. And we know the benefits. We know the impact. What happened? Well, he saved his family. But think bigger. What else happened? He saved humankind. It is because of Noah. It is because of his faith, his belief, his conviction, his obedience that we're here today. You know, if Noah did not have that faith that we read about here, we would not be here today. But because of Noah and his faith, his belief, his conviction, that he could trust in Almighty Yahweh, we have the opportunity to continue on. So certainly a benefit of faith here. And no matter how, it's a lesson, I guess, for us too, no matter how ridiculous it might seem, if we're told to do something, we're to do it. We're not to ask why. We're not to try to talk ourselves out of it. We're to do it. We're to have faith and conviction that Yahweh is true, word is true, and we can count on him, and we're to follow through. Turn to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12. Here's another example of faith. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. This is Abraham. It says, now Yahweh said unto Abram, this is before his name was changed, again, exalted father Abram, when he was changed to Abraham, a father of a multitude, because his role changed. He was then a father to all nations, we know. But it says, get you out of your country and from your kindred and from your father's house unto the land that I will show you. So here Yahweh is saying, get out of here. Go to the land I will show you. Totally unknown at this point to Abraham. Verse 2, and I will make you a great nation. Give seven blessings here. Here they are. Here's the blessings. One, great nation. And I will bless you. Two, and I will make your name great. Three, and you shall be a blessing. Four. Verse 3, and I will curse, and I will bless them that bless you, and I will curse you, will I curse. And in you shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So we find seven blessings that Yahweh gave to Abraham. So Abraham went as Yahweh had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. Now listen to this. And Abraham was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. 75. So here we find that Abraham was told by Yahweh to leave, to get out of where you are now and go to a different country, a country you don't know, a country you're not familiar with, a country you have no clue what to anticipate. And what did Abraham do? Did he say, no, I'm happy here. You know, I've lived 75 long years here, and I don't want to move. I want to stay right where I'm at. No, he packed up his bags, and he left. He left. Now, can you imagine, 75 years old, you're established, and leaving home, you're leaving all that you have, your family, your friends. Jim's talking about friends and family today. You're leaving all that. You're leaving all that and pursuing a land that you know nothing about. You don't know what's there. You don't know what enemies. You don't know what resources. You know nothing. And you're 75 years old. But again, what did Abraham do? He believed Yahweh. He believed Yahweh. And I think this, it might sound simple enough, but this was an accomplishment. And this was hard to do, I'm sure, with Abraham, to leave everything you've ever known for 75 long years to pursue something totally foreign, totally unknown. You have no clue, no knowledge. And he did all this by faith because he believed that Yahweh would see him through. And we all know the story. Yahweh saw him through, brought him to the promised land. The Jews established, the Israelites, I should say, established the kingdom. And many of the prophecies were fulfilled. Turn to Genesis chapter 22 now with me. Now, this is possibly the greatest show of faith. I think it's my favorite passage when speaking about faith. I'm going to read this, most of the passage here, Genesis chapter 22, verse 1. This is the episode or the account of Abraham sacrificing his son Isaac. And for those of us who are parents or were parents, whatever the case might be, we know how hard this would be. Certainly would not be easy. Verse 1 says, "It came to pass after these things that Elohim did prove Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. And he said, Take now your son, your only son," as we know, his only son of promise, Isaac received the promise, "whom you love, even Isaac, and get you into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell you of. And Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and he cut the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went to the place of which Elohim had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place far off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Remain you here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder, and we will worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, and took it and took in his hand the fire and the knife, and they were both of them together. And Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here I am, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? So at this point, Isaac had no knowledge of what would happen. No knowledge. And Abraham said, Elohim will provide himself the lamb, which was almost prophetic, once we get here to the end, for a burnt offering, my son. So they went both of them together. Now again, I'm going to stop here. Can you imagine, just for a moment, I can't imagine doing something like this to little Hope, my daughter, and I mean, it's heart-wrenching to even think of Isaac here, little Isaac. Some people say might have been in the teens. We really don't know, but to go through with something like this, what a test, what a test. I don't know how Abraham did what he did here, but here he is, obeying Yahweh, going to this mountain. He has the fire, he has the wood, he has his sacrifice. And in just a few moments, for him, he believes that it's all coming to an end. But we do know in Hebrews, it says that he had faith that Yahweh could resurrect him. So we know partially the comfort here was he had faith. He had faith. Verse 9. And they came to the place which Elohim had told him of, and Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. So here he has is bound with rope, knife up, ready to slash his own son. It's a horrific thought. It really is. It's a horrific thought. And I wonder, really, how many of us could even contemplate such a thing, such an act. I really wonder. But here he is, ready to slay his own son. Verse 10, and Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of Yahweh called to him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. Here I am. And he said, Lay not your hand upon the lad, neither do anything unto him. For now I know that you fear Elohim, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up as a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place Yahweh Yireh, as it is said to this day, the mount of Yahweh shall be provided. Yahweh Yireh means Yahweh provides. Yahweh provides. And certainly he did. Again, it was almost prophetic when Abraham here told Isaac, Yahweh will provide the lamb. And he did. He did. But he had no knowledge of this. He had no knowledge. Verse 15, and the angel of Yahweh called unto Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, Myself have I sworn, says Yahweh, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, that in blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gate of your enemies. And in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. Many people believe that the blessings we have in this nation are a result of Abraham, of the blessings that we find through his lineage, through his genealogy. Maybe it is. So Abraham returned to his young men, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt in Beersheba. What a story. What a story. This passage shows incredible faith. Faith that you just don't find today, and I guess that's why Abraham's called the father of the faithful. He had a great faith about him. Do we have this same faith that Abraham had long ago? Do we have this faith? Could we go through with it, with what Abraham did? I wish I could say yes, but I don't know. Could we go through? Do we have this faith? And I can't imagine, again, sacrificing, going through, committing my daughter to this type of horrific event. I really question whether we really understand the faith that Abraham had. I wonder if we really understand the faith he had. He was a friend, it says, of Yahweh Most High. You know, why do you suppose he was a friend of Yahweh? It's things like this. He was willing to give all. Nothing he would hold back. He was willing to do everything and anything to please his Father in heaven. There was nothing he would not do. This is the faith this man had. It wasn't a lukewarm faith. It wasn't a cheap faith, a laxed faith. It was a faith that was deep. It was a deep, loving conviction that Abraham had. You know, this is precisely what Yahweh did for us through his son. He sacrificed his son so that we might have a sacrifice, an atonement for our sins. And really what Abraham did here is a foreshadowment of what would happen in the New Testament. It parallels what we find in the New Testament. The only exception here is Abraham did not have to go through what our Father in heaven did by sacrificing his own son. But again, I believe that this is the greatest example of faith we find, maybe in Yahweh's entire word, certainly in the Old Testament, that a single man would be willing to give this type of purpose and value. He was willing again to give all, including his own flesh and blood, which he loved. This was, by the way, his only son of promise. He had no other son. This was it. This is the faith we should aspire to, a faith that should allow us to give all, to hold nothing back, to put Yahweh first at all times, and to grow in his love. And certainly Abraham had all this, and again, it was because he lived by faith. Abraham, we know, obeyed, showing again the working of the law and faith. We know that Abraham obeyed. We can read that in Genesis 26. But he did not live by obedience. He lived by his faith, by his belief, by his conviction, by his assurance that he had in his Father in heaven. Let's turn to James now. James chapter 5, verse 1. 5 verse 11. Sorry about that. 5 verse 11 says, "Behold, we call them blessed that endured. You have heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of Yahweh, how that Yahweh is full of pity and merciful." So here we have a passage talking about Job's patience. And we all know the story of Job. Poor guy, he suffered tremendously. But here it says the end, the patience of Job. The Greek word for patience is hupomone. It means hopeful, endurance, or consistency. These are all attributes of faith. Faith. To have faith, what must we have? We must have hope. Certainty of hope. We must endure. We must have endurance and consistency. These are three attributes of faith. Without these three, you don't have faith. And we know that Job had all three. He was hopeful. He had endurance. He had a consistency. He had faith. He believed. He believed. Think about what this poor man went through. What all he suffered. He lost his children in an accident. Lost his wealth. He was a rich man. Lost that. Lost his health. You know, he is full of boils. Sat in a pile of ashes. This man just suffered horribly. And yet, we know through all that, he always had hope. He always had faith. He never relinquished that hope that he had. You know, would we have this same hope, this same faith, this same conviction if we went through what Job did? You know, if we lost our home, if we lost our wealth, if we lost our children, if we lost everything, our health, would we have this same conviction, this same faith to continue on? No. You know, I can say from experience that most would not, and I hate to say that, but I just don't believe most would have the patience, the endurance, the faith that Job had. He was special. Most, under this type of persecution, would crumble like the walls in New Orleans, and they would let the floodgates open. And even Job's wife at one point asked him, "Why don't you just curse Yahweh and die? Just curse him now and die. Get it over with." He refused. He refused. He simply would not curse Yahweh for the situation he was in. And keep in mind that Job, he had no idea, no clue, no knowledge of what was going behind the scenes. He didn't know this was a test by the old adversary. He had no knowledge of this. All he knew is he lost his family, lost his health, lost his wealth, was sitting in a pile of ashes with boils all over the man. That's all he knew. And yet, when his wife said to curse Yahweh and die, he said, "No, I won't do it. Won't do it." Now, in the end, we know that things worked out for Job. He received double all that he had, received it all back. And we have here an example for us. You know, no matter how bad life might become, and it becomes pretty bad for us at times, or no matter what the situation might be, we should always hang on to hope. Always hang on to faith, to that insurance, to that conviction, because whatever happens in this life, we do have the life to come. It doesn't end here. I believe Job understood that. It doesn't end here. There is a life to come, and no matter what we go through, no matter what trials, what tribulations we face, we always should have faith in our conviction in Almighty Yahweh, because this is only temporary. The life we have now is only finite. it will come to an end. But in the kingdom, when Yahshua returns and we are resurrected to life eternal, it will be forever, eternal. Time out of mind is the word in Hebrew, olam, and that's what we will have. So again, Job shows when life becomes bad, when things are just horrible, we should always hang on to hope, because in the end, you never know. You never know how life will turn out. Turn to Jonah now with me. Jonah, this is somewhat of a unique show of faith, but certainly an applicable one for the message. Jonah, chapter 3, verse 3. So Jonah rose and went to Nineveh. Now this was after he was swallowed by the fish, and Yahweh said, are you going to do it this time? He said, he goes. So he's going to go to Nineveh. He's going to preach Yahweh's word, deliver this prophecy. So he does. He says, he went to Nineveh according to the word of Yahweh. Now, Nineveh was a very great city in 3 days' journey. And Jonah began to enter into the city a day's journey, and he cried and said, yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown. And the people of Nineveh believed Elohim, believed. They had faith. They were convicted. And they proclaimed a fast and put on sackcloth from the greatest of them, even to the least of them. And the tidings reached the king of Nineveh, and he arose from the throne and laid his robe from there and covered himself with sackcloth and sat in ashes. And he made proclamation and published through Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock taste anything. Let them not feed nor drink water, but let them be covered with sackcloth, both man and beast, and let them cry mightily to Elohim. Yes, let them turn every one from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who knows whether Elohim will not turn and repent and turn away from the fierce anger that we perish not? And Elohim saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and Elohim repented of the evil which he had said he would do to them, and he did it not. Nineveh, some say, was about a 3 days' journey, as we find here. Some speculate that was 60 miles, 60 miles from one end to the other end. Some speculate that the city had 600,000 inhabitants. It's a large city. Nineveh was the capital of the Assyrian Empire. The Assyrians were known for false worship, their hatred of the Israelites, and was known for their hostile behavior. And of all the ancient empires, most scholars will say that the Assyrians were the most ruthless. They would put nose rings in their enemies and haul them away like animals. They were a ruthless people. And yet here we find they had faith. They believed. Then Noah said, repent, or else you will be overthrown. And they believed. Now, I'm not sure what's more amazing here, a city the size of Nineveh repenting, or a city full of unbelievers repenting. But it's an amazing story that these people had faith in Yahweh's word to repent. The king himself took off his clothes, put on sackcloth, and he sat in ashes like all the others. And they fasted. It's an amazing story, and one that shows that even for unbelievers, faith is required at times. But through their faith, Nineveh, one of the greatest cities in the ancient world, was saved from destruction, saved from Yahweh overthrowing the city. So I thought that was an amazing and interesting, fascinating account of faith by unbelievers. Not people who believed in Yahweh's word, but unbelievers, false worshipers, and yet they believed Jonah's warning and repented and was saved. Now turn to Daniel chapter 3 with me. Daniel chapter 3. If I have time here, I'd like to get through these two accounts. Daniel chapter 3, verse 8. This is the story of the three Hebrew men. Azariah, Hananel, Mishael were the Hebrew names. We know that their Babylonian names was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, what most of us probably know them as. Look at it, verse 8 with me. Verse 8 says, therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and brought an accusation against the Jews. They answered and said to Nebuchadnezzar, King, O king, live forever. O king, you have made decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, trumpet, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the middle of the burning fire furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded you. They serve not your Elohim nor worship the golden image which you have set up. So they had their enemies, these three young Hebrew men. And here these Babylonian officials are trying to cause trouble. Verse 13, then Nebuchadnezzar in his rage and fury commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these three men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, Is it of purpose, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you serve not my mighty one, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if you be ready that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well, but if you worship not, you shall be cast the same hour into the middle of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that Elohim that shall deliver you out of my hands? Now here's the response. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If it be so, our Elohim, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your Elohim, nor worship the golden image which you have set up. Well, that was pretty plain. No question there. And here's a response. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his vestige was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He was upset, Therefore he spoke and commanded that they should heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their pants or tunics and their mantles and their other garments and were cast into the middle of the burning fire furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the fire furnace very hot, the flame of the fire killed those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those men who threw them in died because this furnace was so hot. But yet here they are in the middle of this furnace. And what happens? And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the middle of the fire furnace, burning fire furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste. He spoke and said to the counselors, Did we not cast these three men bound in the middle of fire? They answered and said to the king, True, O king. He answered and said, Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the middle of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like the son of Elohim. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fire furnace, and he spoke and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you servants of the Most High Elohim, come forth and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the middle of the fire, and the satraps and the deputies and the governors and the king's counselors gathered themselves together, saw these men, that the fire had no power upon their bodies, nor was the hair of their head singed, neither were their mantle changed, nor had the smell of fire passed on them. So here they are in this fire furnace, seven times hotter than normal, walking around. And we had a fourth. Certainly an indication here is an angelic being of some sort protecting them perhaps. But here, if anything, would be impossible to overcome, it would be this. But here these three men, they were fine. They not even smoked. The smell of smoke wasn't even present. Nothing. Nothing was like they were never there. Not only that, though, not only were they saved, but they were promoted. Let's continue on here, verse 28. Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, Blessed be the Elohim of Shadrach, Meshach. This is a Babylonian king here blessing Yahweh because of the power that he saw. who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and have yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any Elohim except their own Elohim. Therefore, I make a decree that every people, nation, and language that speak anything amiss against the Elohim of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their horses shall be made a dunghill. Because there is no Elohim that is able to deliver after this sort. So even this king of Babylon recognized the power that Yahweh showed. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. You know, would we have the faith, like these three men did, to stand before a king and say, I refuse to worship your image, if it meant a fire furnace? But we have this faith. You know, these three Hebrew men, through their faith, did the impossible. They overcame a fire furnace that simply is not humanly possible. When we have faith, and this example shows this, when we have faith in Yahweh, even when we don't understand it at times, we can overcome anything. Nothing is impossible when we have faith in our Father in heaven. Nothing is impossible. And if there's any value here, any lesson that we can learn, it's that nothing is impossible with faith. Faith. These men were able to walk in this furnace, and when they came out, nothing. There's no result, nothing, no impact at all. Through faith, Yahweh turned a bad situation into one of promotion. Not only did the king of Babylon recognize Yahweh and make a law saying, if you speak anything against the mighty one of these three men, I'm going to cut you in pieces. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were promoted. They were promoted. And oftentimes we can experience the same. Sometimes it's not always monetary or worldly promotion. Sometimes it's a blessing that we don't even see. But sometimes in a bad situation, we can be blessed if we have the faith, if we have that conviction, if we hold fast. Like Job, he was blessed. Why? Because he held firm. He didn't change. You know, another thing we can learn here is we must hold fast when it comes to Yahweh's faith. This is no more true for the Sabbath of feast days. We cannot compromise the Sabbath and feast days. Yahweh says, thou shalt keep my Sabbath. And thou shalt honor my feast days. That's what he says. There is no excuse of breaking these laws or any law or any command. We must put Yahweh first. This week, my supervisor came to me and asked or said, we're probably going to go 24/7. Can you work that? Meaning, can I work Friday night and Saturday? And I said, no, my faith comes first. And she said, that's fine. We may have to move you to a different position. If that happens, that's fine. I enjoy what I do, but you know what? Yahweh comes first. Yahweh comes first. I know a man that left for Tabernacles years ago, and you know, his boss said, if you leave, don't come back. You're not going to have a job. Or, guess what? This man had a job. Nothing was said. Nothing was done. But he put Yahweh first. Like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, no different. He put Yahweh first, and we must do the same. We must have the faith to do the same. Turn to chapter 6. Chapter 6, verse 10. How are we doing with time back there? Okay, chapter 6, verse 10. And when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, now this was a 30-day suspension that Darius wrote in law, that they could not pray or worship their mighty one. Couldn't do it. 30 days. He had to abstain. So here's Daniel's response to this law. And when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into the house. Now his windows were open in his chambers toward Jerusalem. And he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his Elohim, as he did before time. Then these men assembled together and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his Elohim. They came near and spoke before the king concerning the king's edict. Have you not signed an edict that every man that shall make petition to any Elohim or man within 30 days, save to you, O king, shall be cast into a den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which alters not. Not even the king could supersede a law in Persia. Once it was a law, it was a law, and it was universal and could not be changed. Verse 13, then they answered and said before the king that Daniel, who is the children of the captivity of Judah, regards not you, O king, nor the edict that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was severely displeased and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to rescue him. Then these men assembled together to the king and said to the king, now, O king, that is a law of the Medes and Persians, that no edict nor statute with the king establishes may be changed. So Darius, he liked Daniel and was not real happy with the situation, but a law is a law. He had to go through with the punishment. Verse 16, then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spoke and said to Daniel, your Elohim, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the lion sealed it with his own signet. And the king sealed it, and with the signet of his rulers, and nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night with fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. So again, Darius the king, they had a friendship. He was not happy with the situation as it was. He couldn't sleep. He fasted. He mourned for Daniel. But we know all things ended up right. Verse 19, and the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came near to the den of Daniel, he cried with a lamentable voice. And king spoke and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living Elohim, is your Elohim, whom you serve continually, able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My Elohim sent his angel and has shut the lion's mouth, and they have not hurt me, because as before him, innocency was found in me, and also before you, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king very glad and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no matter of hurt was found on him, because he had trusted, he had faith in his Elohim. And the king commanded, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions had the mastery of them and broke all their bones in pieces before they came to the bottom of the den. So not only was Daniel saved, his enemies were destroyed, and like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, this man was promoted. Let's read about that. Verse 25. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all the dominions of my kingdom, men tremble in fear before the Elohim of Daniel. For he is the living Elohim and steadfast forever in his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even to the end. So here we have a pagan king again acknowledging Yahweh's greatness. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders of heaven and in earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lion. So we find again that Daniel was promoted. He was restored to his position. And Darius, the king, praised Almighty Yahweh. So just as Hanani, Mishael, the three Hebrew men, withstood the king, so did Daniel. Daniel stood on his conviction of faith. He said, I can't do it, even if it meant death. I will pray my three times a day. That's a good example for us. We should pray several times a day, I believe. Stay in constant communication with Almighty Yahweh. You know, but someday we may be tested in like manner, tested in this way. Will we have the faith, the conviction, the assurance, the stamina to stand strong? to overcome. Now, these stories are not just stories to read. They're stories to encourage, stories to grow, stories to learn from. Nothing was going to prevent Daniel from worshiping his Elohim, worshiping Yahweh, and nothing should stop us. And again, that goes back to the Sabbath feast days. Yahweh says, thou shalt, and we shall. Again, we find promotion because of faith. Daniel was restored. Again, sometimes we can be blessed even through a bad situation as we find here. Now, I'd like to read one more passage if time permits. Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, this is a prophetic passage, a passage that someday might impact you and I. Matthew chapter 24 and verse 3. And as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of your coming, and of the consummation, the end of this age? And Yahshua answered and said to them, take heed that no man lead you astray. That's the first sign we have. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah, and shall lead many astray. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, and you shall and be not troubled, for these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Yahshua is saying, don't worry about it. These things will happen. They must. Verse 7, for nation shall rise up against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and earthquakes in various places. So all these signs will happen as Yahshua's coming becomes closer. But all these things are the beginning of trouble, the beginning of travail, just the beginning. Then shall they deliver you up to tribulation and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. They're going to think they're doing Yahweh's will when they kill us. Yahshua said that. They're going to think they're doing Yahweh's will when they cause us pain and torment. And then shall many stumble and shall deliver up one another and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall arise and shall lead many astray. And because lawlessness shall be multiplied, sin will grow, will become worse. The love of many shall grow cold. You know, out of all these signs, I believe this possibly might be the worst. The love of many. What happens when the love of many becomes cold? I think we can see an illustration during Nazi Germany. The soldiers, how they murdered millions and millions and millions of Jews and citizens without a thought. They grew cold. But he that endures to the end, the same shall be saved, and these good tidings of the kingdom shall be preached to the whole world for a testimony to all the nations, and then shall the end come. Drop down to verse 22. And except those days have been shortened, no flesh would have survived or saved. But for the elect's sake, these days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say to you, lo, here is Messiah, here, believe it not. So Yahshua is saying, don't believe it. Verse 21, I wanted to read that. It says, for then shall be great tribulation, such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, nor shall ever be. Will faith be required during this time? Absolutely. Absolutely. Like never before. This is going to take everything we have to survive during this time. All the signs we've read, the love of man becoming cold, wars, famine, disease, pestilence. We can go to Revelation and read about the other plagues that we'll go through if we survive and if we're alive at this time. Yahshua said that it's going to be the worst time in the history of this world. Daniel verifies that in chapter 12. No other time will compare to the Great Tribulation. The horrific acts in Nazi Germany and Russia and all the other heinous crimes that we've known and seen in the history of mankind will not compare to what we will see right before Yahshua's coming. And there's a reason why Yahshua asked, will I find faith on the earth, or the faith on the earth? There's a reason why. He didn't say it to hear himself speak. There is a reason why he said what he did. It's going to be a hard, horrible time we're going to go through. And hopefully you and I have the faith Because again, it's the faith, that belief, that conviction that's going to get us through. If we don't have that faith, if we don't have that conviction, if we don't have that assurance of Yahweh's promise, of His word, there's no way. If we can't make the dedication now to obey Yahweh, there's not a prayer that we're going to do it in the kingdom or do it in the great tribulation. There's no way. If we can't do it now, we're not going to do it at this time. But remember, with great faith comes great reward. If we have that faith, if we are able to survive and get through that great tribulation, to overcome whatever obstacle, we will be blessed with eternal life. You know, we must believe. We must believe that Yahweh is who He is. We must believe that He is a rewarder of those who seek Him, as we find in Hebrews. We must believe this. The bottom line is this, folks. Without faith, we will never be complete. We will never be complete. So let us all think about some of the men we've read about today, some of their examples, and ask in our own minds, do we have the faith necessary? And if not, we can work on it. May Yahweh bless you all.